ambassador to hear the chief of Columbia's Continental Staff, William L. Shirer. We take you now to Berlin.
Hello, America. Hello, CBS. This is Berlin. The sands are running fast.
And hello. This is America, where the sands are also running fast. Let's check in at the front lines of the fight to save democracy.
Alphonse Capone Scarface, he was a pretty rough guy. He was investigated about 1/100th what Trump was investigated. My father's looking down at me, my mother. How the hell did this happen?
Oh, shit. There goes the neighborhood, folks. Welcome to Trump 2.0. We had Dictator Day. We're going to get to the headlines from that in a moment. But first, I got to introduce this podcast. This is America. I want to introduce my partner in crime, Aaron Murphy. Now, Aaron was the co-author on Hit 'Em Where It Hurts. He's got a lot on his resume. I'm going to let him tell you about it in a second. But first, I just want to say, Aaron, dude, it's good to be back in the trenches with you. What have you been up to? What did you do on an election day?
Well, hey, Rachel, it's good to be back in the trenches with you, my friend. Election day was a tough one. I ran a campaign for governor last year for a really strong candidate named Ryan Bussey. And, well, Montana is now a bright red state. So Ryan lost and Senator John Tester lost. And that was particularly tough for me because I quit my job as a journalist 18 years ago to go work for then State Senator Tester's campaign. He's a hero of mine, and I stayed with him for many years as his communications director and his press secretary. And I was his chief of staff in Washington 8 years ago this very day when Trump became president the first time around. So after Election Day 2024, I did what 2/3 of Americans are doing now. I happily checked out. 73% of Democrats, quote, feel the need to limit their media consumption about government and politics, according to a new survey, and I'll admit it felt nice to do that. But then you called me and kicked my ass, and you mentioned starting up this new podcast, and the importance of it really clicked into place as I watched Elon Musk try to fire up that indoor inauguration crowd at the Capital One Center in Washington this week.
And I just want to say thank you for making it happen. Thank you.
And what you heard there was Elon Musk thumping his chest and slicing his hand upward into the air. It was a Nazi salute, and he did it twice. So, Rachel, the idea behind this podcast, again, This is America, is pretty relevant because of its historic callback.
Yes, I mean, it's an unfortunate, perfect lead-in or segue to talk about the purpose of this podcast. So this is the product of me deciding in January of 2021, really, after Trump's insurrection, that I wanted to feel better because I thought, you know, that was kind of some scary stuff. It was some dictator football stuff.
Yeah.
I'm going to go, and we know a lot about what happened with the Nazis at the end. Okay. But at the beginning, we don't know a lot about. So I wanted to go in and feel better. I thought I'll research the rise of the Nazis. I'll see some how different it is and how it can happen here. And I'll feel so much better. Well, it was the wrong RX because, let me tell you, I ended up feeling a whole hell of a lot worse once I started reading about it. And in that process, I became acquainted with a foreign correspondent from the 1930s who was stationed in Nazi Berlin, William L. Shirer.
Tonight, here in Berlin, we should have a decision whether it's to be peace or war.
And he not only did live reporting, the censors overlooking him from Berlin, you know, during the Nazi regime, which is an extremely dangerous thing to do, as you might imagine. He also smuggled his diaries out of the country in a false bottom suitcase from the SS. I mean, that's incredible. So this show, This is America, is really, it's meant to be a tribute to not only William L. Shirer, but every reporter that's had to cover autocracy from within an autocracy. It's a next level thing that I hope we don't learn too much about here. And, you know, it's also important for folks to understand history will not replicate like DNA, okay? It's not going to show up in the same form like you cloned a dog, but it does echo, and it is echoing here. And I can hear it everywhere. If you study the Nazis or the Third Reich, you'll start seeing it everywhere by the way they bend information. The media, I was just on a BBC show recently, and the live report from Washington, they had a BBC reporter in D.C., and she was reporting how excited Trump's fans were, OK? Okay, she was describing them like this.
But I have never in my life seen anything like this, right? Literally, thousands and thousands of people, the vast majority of them in the red Make America Great Again hats. I mean, they really, really buy into it. They had their placards. They, you know, a couple of times they were standing at the cross in Waiting to Cross, and they just burst into Trump, 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 Trump. There was like a motorcade drove past, and they went absolutely bonkers.
And I just want people to understand, like, literally, that's what the beat reporters from 1933, 1934, the 1936 Nuremberg rallies, that's how they sounded describing Hitler.
Hmm. Yeah, well, that's unsettling. But Rachel, one of the many things I love about you, you call him like you see him, and even when it means hitting him where it hurts.
Yeah, and I got to tell you, I won't do the gaslighting and the same washing. That's, I think, why this pod's going to be so important to people. We're going to be doing Reality Straight, no chaser. And that's why I had to give the BBC some hell. I mean,
you know, how are you gearing up for Trump 2.0?
MAGA believers, true believers, they believe he's an innocent man. The DOJ and the FBI and everybody's in a big conspiracy. Everybody in the whole world, right, for his plain sight crimes. But there's also another segment of the electorate that voted for him that don't read any news. They never watch him. What they know about him is successful businessman. The media has normalized him just like your show was doing before I got on. And so they don't know what's coming. And it's the real question is, what's
so are you saying that all
the
tens of millions of people that chose to vote for Donald Trump were unaware of his legal problems?
Yeah. And so I am telling you now that, yes, there are people that when Trump said, I have nothing to do with Project 2025, because he has that legitimacy and because they have a trust, a partisan trust, they believed him. When he said he was going to protect gay marriage, they believed him. We are going to see what's going to happen when they find out.
Yeah. Well, America is going to find out.
I just want you guys to understand the BBC in the 1930s, it was instrumental to fighting fascism, and now it's Sane washing it.
So let's dive into day one and let's break it down into the three big parts of Monday. First was a scripted, pretty low energy indoor inaugural address in the rotunda of the U.S. Capitol. Moments later, went downstairs for a much more rambly, disjointed speech in Emancipation Hall. And then I'm not sure what to call it, a strange part military parade, part signing ceremony with all the trappings of a full-on MAGA rally a few blocks down from Capitol Hill in the Capitol One Center. There, President Trump put on a show of signing his first executive orders in the middle of the arena, right where the Wizards and the Caps play.
Could you imagine Biden doing this? I don't think so. I don't think so.
Sir, the next item, as you announced in your speech, is a requirement that federal workers return to full-time in-person work immediately.
Stephen Miller was hopping behind him.
We'll get to those executive orders in a moment. But first, Rachel, what struck you most as you watched the great indoor inauguration events of 2025?
Well, look, I mean, what Trump, MAGA, the MAGA media have perfected is the greatest show on earth, you know? And you know, the Nazis also really appreciated the importance of symbolism in presentation. And you can't look at what they did through this inaugural and not say that they didn't understand that and really tap it for what it was worth.
Yeah, I want to go back for a moment to that awkward speech in Emancipation Hall. And again, it was a very strange circumstance. We're surrounded by statues and speaking to what seemed like a much, I guess, friendlier crowd. Anyway, moments after announcing that he is, quote, going to bring law and order back, he began settling his score with what he thinks are his political enemies.
And I was going to talk about the J6 hostages, but you'll be happy because, you know, it's action, not words that count. And you're going to see a lot of action on the J6 hostages. And I was going to talk about the things that Joe did today with the pardons of people that were very, very guilty of very bad crimes, like the Unselect Committee of Political Thugs.
And of course, Trump did pardon all 1,600 of the January 6th insurrectionists last night, including the violent ones, and including Enrico Tarrio, the leader of the Proud Boys, who walked out of prison in Florida moments later. And Rachel, let's unpack this a bit more. What's next for the J6ers and what does it mean for democracy already on its deathbed?
Well, look, I mean, people probably look at the Biden pardons for the Jan 6 committee and the Biden family, and they think, oh, but that was unnecessary. And I'm here to tell you now, I mean, if you spend time researching MAGA, covering MAGA for a living, like I do and others do, it was absolutely necessary. In the MAGA mind, we have an Earth 2 reality, and that Earth 2 reality, we are the perpetrators and they are the victims. And what we have perpetrated, along with stealing the 2020 election, is corruption, the Biden crime family. Fauci was sold a bad vaccine that killed people. I mean, it's a really fake reality. And that's another reason why it's so important to have a program like this going, because, you know, the reality, to hold on to reality now, you're going to have to clutch it with both hands.
One of the things that we focused on in Hit 'Em Where It Hurts is we spent a lot of time talking about the Heritage Foundation, which got up and running in the early 1970s following the Nixon administration, and really got clicking in the first term of Ronald Reagan with the Mandate for Leadership. You were among the leaders in the country of pointing out Project 2025 and the new Mandate for Leadership. And I'm wondering if you might explain what you did, what you saw, how we got there.
Sure. I mean, it starts, honestly, when I was editing our book. We talk about how the Heritage Foundation, I mean, we're talking about how the Republicans have been building this infrastructure to destroy our democracy for about 50 years. And then the first go at it really was the Heritage Foundation's Manual for Leadership, which we talk about in the book. And as I was editing it, I thought, you know, I wonder if these crazy fascist fucks have actually written down all the illegal shit that they want to do in the new Manual for Leadership. And, you know, I go on their website, Heritage, you know, I find it right away. They send it, all 937 bounded pages of it, to me for free, because that's how much money Heritage has. And sure shit, I open it up, I start reading, and it's like, wait, on page one, okay? And right away, I realize, oh my God, not, you know, it's how big do your balls have to be to put out something like Project 2025, to write down like an illegal plan to purge the civil service and do all this crazy shit? And here's, I'll tell you why they did it, is because they knew that we would be too inept to exploit it. But we almost thwarted that effort. And I have to give a shout out to grassroots, especially a lot of people that are following me, for helping in that effort. I mean, I put on the radar of the White House. We ran an extensive grassroots campaign. We made it go from something no one had ever heard of to, you know, really penetrating into the mind of regular people. And we just had crested that hill when all of a sudden the Harris campaign just drops that line of attack, switches to a positive ad on joy. And the rest, as they say, is history.
Well, let's spend a minute also about the folks in the audience of the Trump events yesterday, specifically the high-tech, well, a new term I learned, and I'm going to use it, the broligarchy, billionaires like Mark Zuckerberg, Elon Musk, Jeff Bezos. You know, really hard to look at all of these billionaires, the wealthiest people in the entire world, circling around the most powerful person on the planet. And I can't help but think this really is an oligarchy. What are your thoughts there?
Oh, dude, yeah, you had to look at this from 30,000 feet up and think about how stoked are you if you're Vladimir Putin, okay?
Yeah.
Because, you know, they interfere in social media. They understand propaganda works, help get him elected by almost a freak accident. Now they own the presidency, right? You know, the broligarchy, I mean, this is a product. I think if something doesn't change, we're going to be talking about our Trump oligarchy in ways that we talk about the Putin administration and the oligarchs around him. And when you look at the money that Elon spent, okay, he paid about $35 billion more than market value for Twitter. And he has gotten every value of that back because he used that platform. It's such an, I don't think people realize how much of a megaphone and how remarkable in history Elon Musk's megaphone is, because, you know, in the 30s, the Nazis under Dr. Goebbels, they exploited new technology, like the internet is new now, radio was new then. And they understood, like, wow, we can use this to tap directly into people's brains. Right? They even gave out radios to poor Germans called the People's Radio so they could tune in. Back then, by the way, we thought you have to, suppress all other information to have propaganda work. But now we've seen MAGA redefine January 6th, redefine Trump's plain sight crimes into being an innocent victim of weaponization of the Department of Justice. We've learned a valuable lesson that people will opt in to propaganda. And, what Elon has in terms of his tool to distribute that propaganda is extraordinary. He's hitting 220 million people a time, just each tweet, each lie that he RTs. And I don't think people really appreciate how much of an impact that's having, not just on public opinion here, but also public opinion abroad as he's starting to bring his show to other countries.
Okay, so after the weird rally at the sports arena, Trump and a very excited Stephen Miller took their executive order signing party to the Oval Office. Among the flurry of shit they threw at the wall, in addition to pardoning insurrectionists, a federal hiring freeze, fast-tracking top-secret security clearances for White House staffers, ending diversity, equity, and inclusion programs within the federal government, withdrawing from the Paris Climate Agreement, rescinding many of President Biden's own executive orders, declaring a national, quote, energy emergency, opening the Alaska wilderness to drilling, an order not to enforce the bipartisan congressional ban on TikTok, and, of course, an immediate crackdown on undocumented immigrants.
All illegal entry will immediately be halted, and we will begin the process of returning millions and millions of criminal aliens back to the places from which they came.
Yeah, I got to tell you that a lot of focus, rightly, has focused on the immigration component of these executive orders. I mean, number one, he issued an unconstitutional, facially unconstitutional executive order to revoke birthright citizenship, which is explicitly provided for in the 14th Amendment, and is also, by the way, the basis by which we arrived at a modern America where even if someone's here illegally, we educate them, we don't let them live on the streets, right? So what they want to do with that executive order is get their conservative court to redefine what the meaning of that birthright citizenship is. Of course, when we're talking about these mass deportations, it's important for people to understand when MAGA says illegals, they mean everybody. They mean the legal ones, the asylum seekers, the migrants we targeted right out the bat. When they talk about the Haitian migrants, they talk about them as illegally here. Those are legal, immigrants currently, but Trump's going to revoke their legal status and deport them. And, it's going to make a lot of headlines because you're going to have situations where little kids get dropped off at school in the morning and there's no parent to pick them up in the afternoon, right? Obviously deserves attention and a lot of scrutiny. But what I want to focus on instead is the fact that he followed through on eviscerating the civil service. And I'm going to tell people why. I used to teach political science, intro to American government. The chapter my students hated the most was the federal bureaucracy. But it's important for you to understand that most of the people that work in Washington, D.C. are not political actors. They are actually inoculated on purpose by the law through the Civil Service Protection Act. And what that means is that the people running the bureaucracies of DOJ, the FBI, whatever it is, the IRS, these are merit-based experts in their field, right? And what Trump is doing with this executive order is he's laying the groundwork to kind of push civil servants to either to pledge loyalty to the Trump agenda or to get out. And, I've got to tell you, that's one of the first things that the Nazis did. They understood that if they wanted to move fast, and Trump's the whole pitch for today is how he's going to get shit done for America. Well, it's real easy to get shit done when you suspend the Constitution and run roughshod over the federal statutes, okay? And that's clearly what the goal is of purging the civil service. And, it just ties right back to Project 2025 Heritage. Right in public was collecting a giant databank of people that they could pre-vet to come into these bureaucracies. You do not want bureaucrats, unelected federal bureaucrats, by the is a good thing, okay? Because you don't want them to be subject to political pressure, or they do partisan things, not things that are based on science and data. So, you know, he's really laid the groundwork, and we see this with the cabinet picks too. The cabinet picks, you know, have a wide variety of shortcomings, lack of expertise, crimes, drinking problems, whatever they have. But there is one thing that they all share, Aaron, and that's loyalty. Loyalty to Donald Trump above the Constitution. So between that and the civil service purge, he really does look like he's positioning himself to make a significant power grab and to transition our separation of power system into an executive heavy, at the least, type of system. And that's really where the autocracy will come in.
I want to spend a little time on a couple of other notable pieces of Trump's inaugural speech, something that really stands out for anyone who studies American history.
The United States will once again consider itself a growing nation, one that increases our wealth, expands our territory, builds our cities, raises our expectations, and carries our flag into new and beautiful horizons.
Yeah, he went on to say this nation will plant the stars and stripes on the planet Mars, which you could call an ROI for Elon Musk. But more importantly, it gives some context and clarity to the really unusual talk recently about seizing territory that doesn't or no longer belongs to the U.S., like Greenland and the Panama Canal.
And above all, China is operating the Panama Canal, and we didn't give it to China. We gave it to Panama, and we're taking it back.
Well, Rachel, one of our commitments is to keep this program as close to 30 minutes as possible. But before we wrap things up, I have to ask, what's giving you hope these days?
Yeah, you know, hopefully in a hopeless world, all right? But we've still got a rage against the dying of the light. And, you know, I've had a lot of people since Election Day ask me, what do we do? And the truth is, folks, resistance in a democracy is one thing. Resistance in an autocracy is a whole new ballgame. And we really have to see how far Trump is going to take it. And at the end of the day, you know, we know he's going to issue orders that are frankly unconstitutional. We know now that he's removed the people who wouldn't do it the first time, Mike Pence, the DOJ. They have devised the system intentionally to mitigate the problems that he ran into when he was trying to steal the election in 2020. And so, you know, it is hard to have hope, but what I think is hopeful is that there's a community of people that are intent on holding on to reality, who are intent on remembering there is nothing fucking normal about electing and giving the power of the presidency to a man that we all watched commit four separate serious federal felony criminal conspiracies in plain sight. That happened. Okay. And we can gloss it over. We can have all these great, you know, formal ceremonies of the transfer of power. And I actually understand why Democrats want to do that, because Trump denied us that in 2020. But the fact is, you know, our resistance is going to be conditioned on how far he's willing to go. And so I'm here to tell you how far that is, to make sure that you actually understand what that means for you, the people around you, your family. And to try to convince people to stay in the game, even though I'm acknowledging, and I know you guys don't want to watch the news anymore. And the reason I know it, the reason I called Aaron and got his ass off the couch, is because I don't want to watch the news. We've been doing this for 10 years, guys, okay? And in the timeline of the Third Reich, we're halfway, because for 10 years, from 1923, when he tried his illegal beer hall putsch to seize power, 10 years later, he was elected to office. He had a Mein Kampf out, basically a book outlining exactly all these terrible things that he was going to do. He never admitted to in public. I mean, like I said, history doesn't repeat, but it echoes. And we're going to make sure that here on This Is America, we are in Earth One at all times.
Earth One has a nice ring to it. Well, two quick notes before we close out this week. You can find Rachel's work and some of mine at The Cycle on Substack. That's thecycle.substack.com. Become a subscriber, and if you like what you read or hear, consider becoming a paid subscriber to help us keep this work going. And of course, you can check out our book, Hit 'Em Where It Hurts, How to Save Democracy by Beating Republicans at Their Own Game. You can find it at hitemwhereithurts.com.
And I'm just going to add one thing to that, Aaron. You know, like when you read this book, I want you to understand it was published in February of 2024, okay? Because when you read this book, you're going to think, damn, we should have done that. And I want you to understand how hard we worked trying to do that for America. Came up short, but we're still here and we're still dialed in.
Well said. Thanks, Rachel. Thanks. We'll see you next week.
Awesome.
Please raise your right hand and repeat after me. I, Donald John Trump, do solemnly swear.
I, Donald John Trump, do solemnly swear.
That I will faithfully execute.
That I will faithfully execute.
The office of President of the United States.
The office of President of the United States.
And will, to the best of my ability.
And will, to the best of my ability.
Preserve, protect, and defend.
Preserve, protect, and defend.
The Constitution of the United States.
The Constitution of the United States.
So help me God.
So help me God.